WTBQ. Hello and welcome to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and I thank you so much for joining us here today on your favorite radio station, WTBQ. And don't forget, we are now 93.5 FM, as well as our very faithful 1110 AM. And I hope you're doing great today, and I hope you're sitting down and stay where you are, because I got a fascinating show for you today. This is really interesting stuff. This is a great book, and you might have seen, we're going to talk in just a moment to Peter Lanz, and you might have seen him on MSNBC or CNN talking about the mafia. He has written the most incredible book, Deal with the Devil, the FBI's, secret 30-year relationship with a mafia killer. This is amazing information about how we, taxpayers, have paid for a killer, really, to be there, because the mafia has paid him to kill at the same time. It's just fascinating to me that this could happen. This is an incredible book documented over and over again with all this. And certainly Peter Lanz is an expert on this. This is his, I believe, fourth book, and this is what he often writes on. He is an award-winning journalist and investigative journalist and a former ABC News correspondent, and he has won many Emmys and awards. And I want to welcome Peter Lanz to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
Shannon, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Well, thanks. I'm really looking forward to talking to you. You have written an absolutely incredible book, and I kind of can't believe this can happen, because I don't really think conspiracy theories, I don't think this stuff can happen, but this is absolutely amazing. So what we have done, or what the federal government has done, is actually paid someone to be an informant why they are killing people in the mafia, and we're talking here about Greg Scarpa Sr., right?
Yeah, I mean, it's now that we've had the Whitey Bulger case conclude, right, wherein he was convicted of 11 murders, and while he was an FBI top echelon informant, the public has been exposed to the notion of the government kind of getting down with these villains in order to catch other villains. But the problem is that these, particularly people like Scarpa and Bulger, who have great intelligence, they're very smart people, they know how to manipulate the FBI control agents, if you will. And in the case of Scarpa Sr., I mean, if you go to my website, which is my name, peterlance.com, L-A-N-C-E, you'll see like a debriefing memo at the top of the left-hand side of the homepage that went right to J. Edgar Hoover, the first of 1,153 pages of once secret FBI memos that went right to every director from Hoover to, up to Louis Free, in which they were being kept up to date on Scarpa's secret dealings with the Bureau. And while he got the equivalent of over $1 million in 2013 dollars between taxpayer fees that were paid to him and insurance kickbacks, he was so audacious, Shannon, he would like steal 1,000 cases of Cutty Sark liquor, he'd keep 800, he'd give 200 back, and then he'd get an insurance kick reward on top of that, brokered by his FBI agent. He stopped counting after 50 murders, making, you know, I document 26 separate homicides on the watch of his last control agent, Linda Vecchio, from 80 to 92. So that's compared to Bulger, who was accused of 19 and convicted of 11. So these are homicidal, sociopathic, if not psychopathic killers who are literally working for the government and allowed to stay on the street and prosper with the hope that they're going to give up lesser figures. And so it's just extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. It's a stunning example of corruption. How can we allow something like this to happen? I mean, he was a colorful character, there's no question. And I'm sure researching this book, it was really amusing. But once you pass, amusing is probably a bad word, but once you pass the character of him, what he has done, he was a sociopath. I mean, he was a horrid sociopath and a killer.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you some of the things that are amusing or intriguing, and then some of which might appeal to women. And then I'll get into one of the most abhorrent things that he did to a young woman. He married a woman named Connie Forrest, who was his only legal wife, and he had four children, including Gregory Jr., his son, who was committing crimes at the age of 16. And Scarpa was such an epic earner. He was kind of a Median cartel level earner for the Colombo family that he had a horse farm in New Jersey. So he shipped Connie off to this horse farm where he could breed thoroughbreds. It was that level of horse farm. And then he took up with this beautiful woman named Linda Diana. And on my homepage at peterlance.com on the right-hand side, I have some photos. And you see, she was a knockout. She started dating wise guys when she was 15. So he She became his guma, if you will, his girlfriend. He had two children by her, little Linda and Joey. And then while living with her common law and commuting on weekends to see his legal wife, he flew to Las Vegas in 1975 and married Lily Dejani, a former Miss Israel, who looked like Gina Lola Brigida. And then he bought her an apartment for cash on Sutton Place in Manhattan, the most exclusive street in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So he put her up as his mistress. So he's multitasking, okay? He's commuting in between these three women, and at the same time, such an epic, criminal for the mob. So that's the kind of intriguing thing about Scarpa that was intriguing, but one of the things that underscores what a monster he was, there was one incident involving this beautiful young woman named Mary Barry, B-A-R-I, and she had been the girlfriend of Ally Boy Persico, the underboss of the family who had been on the lam for years, and she had lost contact with him. But somehow the rumor developed that she knew where he was and that she was going to cooperate with law enforcement. So she was invited. She was down on her luck, really desperate. She was invited to come to this club called Occasions in Brooklyn for a waitressing job. So she gets all dolled up. They send a car for her. As soon as she walks in, Scarpa grabs her around the neck, shoots her in the head, and wraps her up in a tarp, and they drop her on the street like a dog. And then the next day, when Carmine Sessa, his consigliere, was cleaning the club with bleach to wash it down, his wife's dog found a part of this young woman's ear, and they joked about it over dinner that night. I mean, that's what we're talking about. There's no romance here.
No.
The romance of Cosa Nostra did not exist for these men. They were absolutely despicable killers, and at the same time, Scarpa Sr. was probably the most important informant that was used by the top level of the FBI.
That I don't understand how that can be. He was completely, continually ratting out his competition in his world, right? And
right.
At the same time, you know, killing who he wanted to and getting paid by us to do this. I mean, this is not a glamorous life. It certainly he had glamorous parts of it, but he is a killer that we paid to inform us and also right. allowed him to kill other people. Did anything happen because of this? I mean, was anybody held accountable?
Great question. And, first of all, to go back a little bit to answer the question, the Colombo family had, one of the New York Five families, had only about 130 maid members, actual maid wise guys, and compared to like 600 in the Gambino family of John Gotti. But they were the most violent over the years, and now we know why. They had a famous war in the 1960s called the Profaci War. Then there was the famous Gallo War in the 70s where Joey Gallo was killed at Umberto's Clam House. And then this last war from 1991 to 93, 14 people were killed in Brooklyn, including two innocent bystanders. And we now know that that third war was entirely instigated and largely perpetrated by Scarpa Sr. using intelligence that was supplied by the Bureau. He would find out where his rivals were and he'd kill them. Yeah, it's absolutely outrageous, and in fact, it violates what's known as the Attorney General guidelines. In the 1960s, if you recall, the FBI had an illegal program called COINTELPRO, the right. counterintelligence program. It started to against the Klan, the Ku Klux Klan, and nobody really was troubled by it at that point because it was the invisible empire they were trying to take down. And it was Hoover allowed his agents to supplant evidence, kick in doors, violate civil liberties with reckless abandon to get the Klan. But then Hoover turned it on the anti-war movement and ultimately on the civil rights movement. And they actually bugged a hotel in Washington where allegedly Martin Luther King was having sex with a woman. They sent the tape to Coretta knowing that she would get it. And they actually sent a note to Martin Luther King suggesting he should commit suicide. So that's how low the government, the FBI, had gotten at that point in the 60s. And this COINTELPRO was exposed in a series of hearings by Senator Frank Church and Congressman Otis Pike of New York, not too far away, his district from the sound of your voice, you know. Mm-hmm. And these two courageous members of the Senate and Congress had these hearings. They were kind of like the Iran-Contra hearings of their day. And after that, that's when they set up these attorney general guidelines. They were supposed to stop Shannon. This was not supposed to happen. Well, I prove in this book, Deal with the Devil, that until the 1990s, they conducted a COINTELPRO against the mob, using mafia killers to kill other mafioso, or at least rein them in. And one of the prime beneficiaries of this was Rudy Giuliani. When Rudy Giuliani was the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District in the famous Mafia Commission case, he used, we now know, he used Scarpa Sr. Through Linda Vecchio, his control agent, to come up with the probable cause for most of the Title III wiretaps that convicted the bosses of three of the five families. That made Rudy's political career, propelled him to Gracie Mansion, and kind of cemented his reputation as a crime buster. And so had Linda Vecchio, who was indicted on four counts of murder in 2006, and his trial ended abruptly in 2007, had he gone down the way John Connolly, Whitey Bulger's agent, went down as convicted and doing life, those cases, in the words of a federal judge in Brooklyn, would have unraveled the many Colombo War cases. So the stakes for the feds in the DeVecchio situation, Scarpa scandal, were much higher than in Boston with Whitey Bulger and John Connolly.
Wow. Now, the person you're talking about, DeVecchio, here is an FBI agent, Lindley DeVecchio. And that's right. An interesting story itself. Also, we have with us one of our guest hosts here, Jerry Boss. When I came in with your book, said, oh, my God, he has read all of your books and really wants to talk to you. First, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to come back and talk about that. And we're going to have Jerry Boss join in the conversation. We are talking with Peter Lanz, who has written an incredible new book. And we'll be back. Deal with the Devil. And we'll be back here in just a few on WTVQ.
Johnson's Toyota has leased or sold over 1,000 vehicles, making us one of the largest dealers in the Hudson Valley. In order to sell this many, our professional staff has been told that your car buying experience must be the absolute best. We have more new cars. We have more used cars. We have the lowest prices hands down, whether you're leasing or buying. If you're not singing our jingle, then you pay too much. Visit johnsonstoyota.com and see hundreds of used cars and many for under 10 grand. More cars, professional staff, and our low prices will make your car buying experience the best it can be. And remember, if you're not singing our jingle, you pay too much. Johnston's Toyota in two convenient locations, Middletown and Monticello, wants you to join their exclusive club of happy car buyers and to sing along with the number one jingle on the radio today. See johnsonstoyota.com for details.
This is a great time for the delicious taste of eggs. It's fast food that's easy to prepare for breakfast, lunch, dinner, or anytime you want something quick, natural, and absolutely good for you. Why not gather the family around the table and serve up omelets, a quiche, or use your imagination? This is a busy time of year. School activities, dealing with this crazy weather, or just watching your favorite team play. You want something quick, easy, and healthy. The answer is simple. Eggs, the incredible edible egg. It's high in protein and so easy to prepare. Your family will love it, and it comes in its own convenient package. Eggs are nature's perfect food. This is a great time for the delicious taste of eggs. This message courtesy of the American Egg Board and the New Jersey Poultry Promotion Council. That's your local egg producers. Remember, locally produced eggs are fresher by miles. Enjoy eggs today.
Hi, it's Dr. Oz, inviting you to join me for your daily dose with Dr. Oz. I want to make sure you're informed. The number one weapon against illness is wellness. That's my daily mission.
Weekdays at 1:30 on WTBQ, radio worth listening to. WTBQ.
Hello and welcome back to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and don't go anywhere. We are talking with Peter Lanz today, who has written an incredible, absolutely incredible new book, Deal with the Devil, the FBI's Secret 30-Year Relationship with a Mafia Killer. And in this, he documents everything. It's just an incredible read. He has done an incredible job. I mean, you're really wonderful at this. I mean, you're truly an investigative journalist, and you have done an amazing job. As I mentioned before, Jerry Boss, one of our guest hosts here on WTBQ, has read all of your books and was amazed amazed when he saw this. I'm going to let him pipe in because he has some questions and he knows a lot about this because he worked downtown at the time. So this is Jerry Boss talking with Peter Lance.
Peter,
hey, Jerry.
I believe we probably have a lot of people in common. We know I spent, well, I was assigned to the New York Joint Task Force. Mr. Caracappa at the time was in one of the groups there, Steve Caracappa, who... He was a nothing then.
I mean, one of the mafia cops.
Yeah,
right?
You would never. I mean, he was like, you know, yeah, there's Steve. Nothing as to. I mean, you know, we had some real characters back then.
Right.
You know, a lot of the guys from the old SIU filtered into our office, and then there was all scandals and gaga. But the task force is still in. It's still in existence today. I had spent, two and a half years in the Southern District, assigned to U.S. Attorney's office, and I knew Rudy. And Rudy, very sharp guy, but had an ego that went from the Brooklyn Bridge to Westchester County. He'd sit there with the cigar and the whole thing. But I had a very good relationship with him. And my interaction down there was I did the French Connection theft.
Right.
From,
okay, the heroin. Yeah,
yes.
It was stolen.
Yeah, that
right.
was my case and my partner's. And, you know, we worked a lot of the wise guys. We were all heroin. You know, we were basically back in the 70s. Heroin was king. But, you know, I looked through the index. I see Joe Coffey is in there. And,
right.
You know, all of the guys back in that 70s period. But in reading the book, and I can't recall the name of it, it had to do with Lynn DeVecchio. And he stood trial in the Eastern District, if I remember correctly, and was found not guilty.
Right.
And in the book, they certainly...
Well, they didn't find him not guilty. The case was dismissed kind of after 2 weeks because his girlfriend, Linda Shiro, was believed to have committed perjury, although a special DA later concluded she had not. But that trial was partly the result of my middle book cover-up, partly the result of Bill Delahunt, the congressman from Massachusetts who'd been Norfolk County DA and knew the Bulger case, and partly because of Angela Clementi, the forensic investigator who turned up a lot of amazing material, including some of the 209s in my book, I mean the 1,153 pages, she got through Freedom of Information, and I was able to get access to them. So, you know, those three elements converged, and DeVecchio was put on trial, but the trial ended abruptly, and he skated, basically.
Let me ask you a question. Since we have the Freedom of Information Act, how different does that make it now than it did 20, 30 years ago to get this information that you could put in your book?
Well, it's extremely difficult. Angela and her lawyer, James Lassar, began, I think, in 1998, I think, is when they first filed. And much of the information, it took years and years, and the feds are still trying to fight them. The feds are constantly, the Southern District and the Eastern District feds are constantly objecting to the release of this material because basically it exposes so much government misconduct. It's not that this stuff is revealing sensitive secrets and methods, as Mr. Boss would know, is the term that they use that where you don't want the bad guys to find out how the law enforcement's doing it, but it's largely to protect the reputations of people who really made some bad decisions for our government over the years. And you know, and if you've read my other three books, A Thousand Years for Revenge, Cover Up, and Triple Cross, you know
which Jerry
that,
has.
You know, the big story here is that in Forever Bothering Italians, you know, not that the mob wasn't worthy of investigation and prosecution, but they took their eye off this Al-Qaeda cell that was metastasizing, and I prove in my books was responsible not just for the 93 bombing, but the 9/11 attack. So if you measure the collective villainy of the mafia and the entire from the 1930s up through Murder Incorporated and the Five Families, it doesn't even begin to equal 1/100% of the damage done the day the towers went down.
You know, you're so on the money here, and I've always been critical of this. You know, if you're Italian, you're going to get the front page. But if you're the Al-Qaeda's and never, well, we have nothing to do this week. Let's go lock up an Italian and we're going to make this guy the capo di tutti capo, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But in one of the books, and it may have been yours, they discuss a female FBI agent.
Yeah, Nancy Floyd. I was the first person to report about her. I'm the only one that's ever told her story.
I'm telling you, it was so scary what the Bureau did to that young lady to shut her up.
Right.
And, you know, even her bosses, they lied about her. And, you know, right. she had a top level stool pigeon in, you know, in the radical Islamist community. I think it was the guy that was next to the blind sheikh.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Let me just bring you up to date. By the way, if you go to peterlance.com, I keep plugging my website, because
which is,
I have,
by
a
the
ton
way,
of information.
It's on. We have it on our website, so it's a hot link.
Yeah.
So
now, if you go down on the right hand side, you'll see there's a 32 page timeline, which I had in the book Triple Cross. Starts with the murder of Anwar Sadat, goes all the way up and tells the story, integrating the organized crime and the terrorism story. But let me tell you briefly the remarkable story about Nancy Floyd that was in my first book, A Thousand Years for Revenge. Mm-hmm. Nancy Floyd was this light, little pistol of a redheaded agent from Texas, real tough young woman, and she was working Russian foreign counterintelligence, and she was going around to hotels in the Times Square area looking for Russian diplomats who might have been in flagrante delicto, if you know what I mean, so they could try and turn them.
That too?
So she meets this guy, Ahmed Salem, this incredible ex-Egyptian army officer who's down on his luck. He immigrated to America, and he's working like as a desk night man at this hotel and for $500 a week. And he basically tells her about the blind sheikh, Omar Abdelrahman, who's the prince of jihad, who's now in New Jersey. He's preaching in Jersey City. He's preaching in two mosques in Brooklyn. And, you know, he's the pope of radical Islam, this guy, okay? So he says to her, if you pay my salary, I will go undercover. And they gave him like 3 months, and he did it in like 2 weeks. And you see him in like New York Times. He's like the bodyguard for the blind sheikh.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this, so they have this incredible asset now inside this cell. And he's going up to Attica, the guy who killed Rabbi Kahani, El Sayed Nasser. That's the first blood spilled by Al-Qaeda on American soil. He's now doing time at Attica. And Ahmed Salem is visiting him, and he's kind of vamping. You know, he's getting fake fuses. They want to blow up bombs, but he's kind of pretending. And then this empty suit named Carson Dunbar, former Jersey State Trooper, takes over as the head of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. The guy has no terrorism experience whatsoever. He's a very arrogant guy. He doesn't like Nancy Floyd. He doesn't like Ahmed Salem. And he says to him, you're going to have to wear a wire. And the guy says, that's not the deal. I'm sleeping on the floors of mosques. I'm not wearing a wire. And so Ahmed Salem withdrew from the cell, only to have them bring in Ramzi Youssef, a real bomb maker, okay, from trained in Wales, like who's, you know, the nephew of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you know, major Al-Qaeda all-star. He comes in and sets the bomb in the Trade Center. Six dead, 1,000 injured, February 26, 1993. And right after that, Ahmed Salem, out of just feeling guilty, even though he shouldn't have felt guilt because he didn't do anything wrong, he agrees to go back undercover. And this time they wire a warehouse in Queens, and it's the plot to blow up the bridges and tunnels called the Day of Terror plot. And then 6 months, he rounds up the blind sheikh and 11 others. He testified for 30 days at trial, and he went into witness protection with his family for 14 years. And he finally reached out to me in 2009. I was speaking at NYU. He contacted me, and I did a piece for Playboy. And yes, they do have articles in Playboy magazine. They, you know, it's little known, but they
that was
do.
Always the excuse.
right. So that article is on my website. It's called The Spy Who Came In for the Heat, peterlance.com. So you'll get the Nancy Floyd, Ahmed Salem story that Brother Boss just alluded to.
Okay. You know, it was so obvious as to what they did to her. I mean, you know, I've been in the business. I worked with the Phoebes, and, you know, in fact, after I retired from the New York State Troopers, I went with DEA. I was with them for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see some of the things that go on, you just got to shake your head. You say, whoa, what's the hell's going on here?
Yeah. They even leaked a story to the New York Post that she was having an affair with Salem. It was called The Temptress and the Spy.
Listen, Temptress. I used to hang around on the East Side. She would have been better off hanging with the guys I was with than that guy. We had some real method actors.
So that's when the Bureau would take one of their own heroic agents like that and denigrate them that way to protect their own, mistakes. But if you go, we have like two more minutes. Let me do this one thing that relates to New Jersey, okay? I'm going to give you three dots on the chart and show you how they could have stopped the 9/11 plot if they focused. One, 1990, they know that El Sayed Nasser, the killer of Rabbi Kahane, has a mailbox at a place called Sphinx Trading on Kennedy Boulevard. It's in the same building down below from the Blind Sheikh's Al Salam Mosque. Dot number two, in 1994, Patrick Fitzgerald and Andy McCarthy, in the Day of Terror case, have a list of 172 unindicted co-conspirators. On the list, Osama bin Laden, Ali Mohammed, and a guy named Walid al-Noor, the co-incorporator of Sphinx Trading. He's on this list with bin Laden. Now, where do you think two of the 9/11 hijackers got their fake IDs in July of 01? Sphinx Trading. Al-Madar and al-Hazmi, who flew AA-77 into the Pentagon, picked up their fake IDs from Mohammed al-Atras, the partner of Walid al-Noor. So I argue, and I have a piece that I wrote for the Huffington Post.
I have it right in front of me. Yeah,
all they had to do was, like, focus, like, spend 5% of the energy they spent on John Gotti's Ravenite Social Club for years, they would have been right in the middle of the 9/11 plot.
Yeah, now this is a great piece in the Huffington Post, Al-Qaeda and the Mob, how the FBI blew it on 9/11. Yeah. You can read that at the Huffington Post. You can read it at peterlance.com. And all of this is on Shannon's Corner with a hot link directly to your website, so everybody can easily go there. This is an incredible book. You have done an incredible job here. I mean, it's just absolutely wonderful. Deal with the Devil, the FBI's secret 30-year relationship with a mafia killer. Incredible stuff. You've done a wonderful job. I encourage everybody to read this book. Great job.
Peter,
thank you so much for joining us.
Hang on a minute. I'm going to put you on a landline.
Okay.
I want to talk to you off the air.
Thanks again for joining us, Peter. And everybody, we do have to wrap it up today. Until next time, don't forget to make good choices.